thank you a lot for giving me the opportunity of giving a talk here. Also, since it's the last day, and since I am among the senior of this group, I think I should ask you to thank the organizer and give them a big hand. That was a great week. That's one thing. Thanks a lot. Then to start my talk, you will notice that I have a question mark here. And as a result, I would like to present, frankly, I'm not completely satisfied with them. They are far from being complete. They are things to understand. And since I have asked all these younger collaborators to work with me, so maybe it's my duty to say what works and what doesn't work. Okay? And next thing, I would really thanks also Pierre and Alex for the introduction. It saves me a lot of time because it's really a continuation. And the first thing I would speak about quantum. N particle limit for n going to infinity of quantum system. So the natural first objects are the wave, which are normalized. You have seen that at the beginning of the day of L to norm, which is equal to 1. This will be preserved by the flow. Then you have a very natural operator, which is the projection on such wave. And you observe that this projector is a density, which means a self-adjoint operator, which is of trace class, and which trace is 1, and the natural object that I will have to deal after that are these guys. Now, since you have this notion of indistinguishability of particle, then this, in a mathematical way, it's traduced by the way that this density, they commute with any permutation operator in the space. And I want you to observe that this is automatically satisfied if this guy is not changed under permutation of the variable, and that it is also satisfied if it is changed modulo minus sign, because you have a minus sign here and a minus sign there, and then the density is unchanged. Now, both for the physics and for the mathematics that I will do, the next object that come with here are the reduced density operator. How you get a reduced density operator? It has a kernel. You take the last variable, going from small n to capital N. You call them z on the diagonal, and you integrate with respect to that. And of course, it has a natural physical interpretation in the term that if you want to define the observable as the action on an bounded or compact operator, you just take the trace of this guy, dn, reduce at the order small n. To do that, you take the trace of the big guy, who works in the space of three capital N operator, and you make it act on this operator K, extend by the identity. Okay, so that's this tool, they will come in the rest of the talk, this reduced density. Okay. Now, the natural object to start with is the Schrödinger operator. And now, the point is that I had the chance of having this talk, we have the chance of having this talk of Alex just before, which for me will be an excuse to put a 1 over n of a order or a 1 over n minus 1 with no other justification that it works mathematically and that it is the only scaling that will give me at the limit non-trivial quantum equation for the one particle equation. You will see in the next step why it's so, this way, joke. Now, when you have that, you can immediately go back to the notion and density and observe that the density which is construct with the wave operator, it's explicitly given by that formula. And if you derive this formula using the chain rule, you obtain the same equation as above, except now it's written for operator in terms of commutator, and it carries the name of the von Neumann equation. And it's this one that would be convenient for the rest. The first V, second V is the one that really will create the action. And the first is different, and the first is the confining, and in many cases it can be there or not for the mathematics. You will find out by yourself where it creates a difficulty or not, but it's a confine, and I will omit here it very often just to save time. Okay? Now, of course, they have just a time problem, which, okay, now I want to go back. So the last thing I want to say is that I will use systematically the fact that this density commute with the permutation, and doing so, you can from this equation, this equation for the dn, deduce an equation for an hierarchy, which will come on the next slide. Oops. That is. And this is an hierarchy. Why? Because if you just compute an equation, if you reduce it at the order small n, you obtain a set of terms which depends on dn and small n, plus a remainder term, and the remainder term involves the density at the order n plus 1. And if you decide that d of capital N small n will be 0 for small n bigger than capital N, you have an infinite hierarchy. And we have seen many hierarchy in this week. It turns out that this one, due to the fact that you have the 1 over n here, which I will call the mean field scaling now, is among the most tractable one, for which at least formally everything works very well. The closure problem will be easy to deal with. Okay? Next, I can rewrite that. You see, I have the 1 over n here. This guy will go to 0, and this is almost 1. So I can rewrite that in a simpler form, where you have the Hamiltonian at the order small n, plus the term which acts on the n plus 1 term, plus a remainder term which hopefully will be always small. And then the next thing I want to talk about for that are what is an R3 and an R3 fork, and that's for this density. The idea is to introduce quantity that I will call f capital N small n of t, that such that for n capital N going to infinity and small n fixed, they will give a very natural approximation of the density, of the reduced density. And of course, the most important case, the natural physical case, is the case for n equal 1, but to have a theorem, you need to study all of them. Now, there are two kind of things that one consider. One will be what is called the R3 approximation, which corresponds to what people call boson, and the other one will be the R3 fork which people refer to fermion. And I will focus mostly on the R3 fork because we made that the point on which we have been currently working, just to recall what is the R3 approximation. You just take the same function, take just the product from 1 to small n, put it in the infinite hierarchy, observe that this hierarchy, I think I will work with this thing more at ease, observe that this hierarchy is just observe that it's an identity, and in fact, this is the way where you get the R3, what is called the R2 equation, and at the limit, the non-linear Schrödinger-Poisson equation. Okay, what I will say is an extension to the situation where you want the R3 fork. Now, R3 fork approximation, it's known that you use that because it's compatible with the Pauli exclusion principle that leads to the R3 fork equation that you will see on the next slide, and correspond also to what people have developed for the ground state. I want to discuss that. Now, to do that, you start by an ansatz. For this ansatz, you take a family of orthogonal functions, and your wave function will be just the determinant of this guy normalized by 1 over the factorial n. And the basic property you find, first, that the dn is a density, if you change the sign of the exchange of the particle here, you have a minus 1 of both sides, and there is a most important issue that your dn1 is explicitly expressed as the projector on this function of one particle just divided by 1 over n. Then you make a simple computation. I learned that from Alex. You compute the reduced density of this guy, and you see that it's almost the same thing as taking dn1, tensoring it at the order small n, and applying the operator which anti-symmetrizes the space at the order small n. And this guy, by the Stirling formula, just goes to 1 when capital N goes to infinity, and that will be important for the rest of the story. Now, one of the consequences is that the information on the phi g, which are here, which depend just on one variable, and the dn of 1 are more or less, one can hope that they are equivalent, because if you look at dn1, these guys are the eigenvalue of the dn1. So in some sense, information on the dn1 should be the same as the information on the phi g. The other important thing, the thing I want to stress, is that I will have to use the trace norm, which is a very natural physical object, but in the present case, it is something which is compulsory. Because if I want to look at the meaning of an asymptotic, I just find that if I take an other norm, weaker norm, take dn1 in operator norm, then this operator is a projector, as a bounded operator, it's of norm less than 1, you have the factor 1 over n. When n goes to infinity, this goes to 0, while the trace remains equal to 1. So pertinent information will be contained in the trace norm. And the thing that I want to compare that with what people do with the WKB approximation. If you put the WKB approximation for with an A which is in L2, this is a function which is in L2, it will produce an approximation of the Schrödinger equation in L2, but if you look at that, in any weaker norm, if the gradient of S is not degenerate, all that goes to zero. So you can think as Hartree Fock playing the same role as the WKB, and that's for my program. Okay. Now, this is a notion of Slater closure, which is just a generalization of what I said before. I will say that the density dnn at Slater closure, if this quantity goes to zero, which is what happens when you have the Slater determinant. Okay? Now, what's known is that to get an equation for this phi, there is a system of n equation, capital N equation with n unknown, which is used to compute the orbital. In the meantime, one observes that this system, and this is completely in agreement with what I said before, which is that this density should contain all the information. As a consequence, you can just by simple computation show that this equation is equivalent, the system of equation, to a simple operator equation for the reduced density F1, and which is the bracket with the Laplacian. Then here you tensorize twice F, you apply the potential V, the bracket with the potential V x1 minus x2, and you reduce it as an operator in R3 space, which means so this will be the R3 Fock equation I want to consider. What's the U? U12 was just the transposition between the two variables x1 and x2, which means that here you would have just what people find in the R3 equation, and the U12 will be just anti-symmetrize the thing and produce what is called the exchange term in the R3 Fock equation, which I will have to discuss. Okay. Now, you recover what is needed is the difference between these two guys, This one is the tensorized at the order f, which is a solution of this one. And I want to show that the limit between these two go to zero in Fresnel. Okay. Now, the idea is just to plug to the Fn in hierarchy. Now it's a trick which I learned, we'll all learn from Peter Lacks. If you want to prove convergence of something, you prove consistency and stability, you add the two things together and you have the convergence. So I put that in the equation and the Fn in the hierarchy, infinite hierarchy, and I compute the remainder, and I will go back to the remainder that was also an idea of Alex. The important point is that the remainder is a reduction of the order n, and that you sum here for g small to n, and here for k different to g. I will tell you later on from where that comes. Now, if you take the error, the difference between the tree solution and this one, you find out the first term and two error terms. The next, the Rn, which is R here, and the epsilon Nn, which came just from the fact that the initial density did not exactly satisfy the equation. There was a fact, points on the factor capital N minus small n over small n minus 1, and so on. Okay? So, the first thing is to look at the stability, and to look at the stability of the hierarchy, there is a standard trick that we wanted to advocate, which goes as follow. You try to write this equation, which was on the previous slide, in an abstract setting. That's the error. There is an AN, which has the bracket with the Hamiltonian, which is obviously the generator of a group. And then there is an operator which brings back the AN plus 1 into the function of AN. So at this, what I claim is that this infinite hierarchy is equivalent to this hierarchy, just an abstract setting, where the Cn n plus 1 are operator from xn plus 1 to xn. And if you remember, there were in fact n small n terms of this type, so you have an estimate of that type. So it's an abstract setting of the previous slide. Now, if you have this equation, and if you make this hypothesis for the scalar space, you can prove the following theorem, which is that if you assume that the initial data are that the remainder is bounded by a power of a function of a constant n that multiply a function f phi of capital N that will go to zero with capital N, then if the initial limit, initial value go to zero, and if this phi n go to zero, then you have a stability theorem that says that the E capital N small n t go to zero. In fact, this is exactly, if you think about it, just for people that have seen that, an abstract version of the Cauchy-Kowalewski theorem as it was written by Nishida and people after that. And you know, it's a local in time theorem. So it just gives local results. And that's the reason why I add this extra hypothesis on uniform estimate for all time that will allow me to say that the result is not valid for small time, but is valid as long as I have a bound of that type. Now, this is really a Cauchy-Kowalewski theorem. I can leave you as an exercise to prove it. Now it's well done. And with that, I just have to bring this, the hierarchy in the frame of this abstract theorem. And the first thing I want to, which means I want to prove the continuity of this operator and the fact that the remainder are small. Now, that goes that way if you, if the potential is bounded, then you just go, find out that the trace class operator are exactly tailored in a way that this operator turns out to be bounded by two times the subnorm of the potential, the error in the this xn plus 1 space. Now, if you compute the remainder, to compute the remainder, you use the fact that these two index, g and k, are different, and that allows you to write the remainder term as a sum of typical term of this type, and this term turns out to, trying to integrate once, they turn out to be product of operator. Now, thanks to their product of operator, you just get the subnorm of V, the norm of the Fn minus Fn, which is the tensorized, anti-symmetrized product of F, and the operator F. And as you compute the trace, to have the trace of a product of operator, you get the subnorm, the trace norm, and the operator norm. One can show that this trace remains like that. One, and then this F, since it's the operator norm, it's bounded by V over capital N. So you have both the consistency, the stability, and you have the limit. Now, we have to go further. So you, in some sense, you have a good news, which is that for the bounded potential, one can show that the R34 Kansas produce a meaningful approximation and for the n-particle time-dependent Schrödinger equation. It's important that the initial data should be the same, or that they should be closed from a slatted determinant, and that says also that produce a kind of closure theorem, because that says that if you start from a slatted determinant, the Hamiltonian system will destroy the slatted structure, but then when n goes to infinity, you recover the slatted structure. That's the good news. Now, what is the bad news? The bad news is that if I compute the exchange term, which seems to play an important role in the R34 approximation, I just do it for you. The exchange term, which characterizes the R34 equation, turns out to be an expression of that type. It's a product of operator. So if I compute the trace, I can bound that by the Hilbert-Schmidt norm of VF that multiply the Hilbert-Schmidt norm of Fn, and since as bounded operator, this Fn are of trace 1, and since they are trace 1 and operator norm 1 over n, these two guys are of norm 1 over square root of n, and all this quantity goes to 0, which creates some doubt on the real necessity in this formalism to have the R34 approximation, to have the last term in the R34 approximation. Nevertheless, it's the approximation at work. I mean, I could go back to that. Now, the observation came from the fact that I was dealing with a smooth potential. Next idea, try to extend that to the Coulomb potential. Now, if you want to extend that to the Coulomb potential, you want first to solve the R34 equation. And to solve the R34 equation, I know a result, I can use a result, which is a result of Shaddam and Glasser, where they had a proof of solution of the time-dependent R34 equation. Then I have to find the scale of space for which this typical operator, which I rewrote in more detail, but is the same, say n plus 1, will have the good continuity thing. And I want also to have consistency in the same norm. Okay, so I want these 3 points. I won't go into detail, but I want to comment on these 3 points. The first point, existence of an R34 solution of the R34 equation, has been proven by Shaddam and Glasser, and they use the conservation of energy. And in fact, at this level, we need the potential to be positive to look at the repulsive case, and in this case, this quantity is conserved, and that gives a simple the reason why it is positive is written below, and that gives you a simple proof of the existence of a smooth solution of the R3 equation. Now, the other thing is that the point 2 and 3 can be directly adapted from, which means passing from the smooth potential to a Coulomb potential, from a paper of Erdős and Yao, where they did the same trick for the R3 approximation. And their idea is to just take another class of space, which are class of space which are slightly more regular, meaning that I compress the trace, which means I put something that n times the Laplacian, or the Laplacian with respect to any of the x variables before and after the operator k, and then I take the trace norm of this one. More or less, when you have an operator which is defined just as a projector, that involves the gradient with respect to each of the components of the projector. And with that, and with the Lorentz inequality and some technicality, one can prove, they prove the result for the R3 approximation. Now, the good news for that is that we were able to prove all that exactly the same way for the R3 Fock approximation and prove the validity of the R3 Fock approximation. But now there's some critic on that, the caveat, and the critics comes from the fact that besides some technical hypotheses, and I don't want to go there, the basic hypothesis that we need to do the proof is that the energy of the initial state which is bounded, which means that this quantity should remain uniformly bounded, and up to now it is really a cornerstone already in the proof of the existence of a solution of the R3 Fock equation as it is done by Glasser and Chadam, which means that seems this is a real important step in the proof, not a technicality up to now. Now, when you have that, there is an inequality which is called the Lieb-Thiering inequality that you obtain by looking at the ground state of an Hamiltonian with a negative potential, which says that if you look at this density at the power 5/3 is bounded by the energy provided the phi g are a set of orthonormal vector, which is exactly the case where we are. And for us, it's a bad news. And it's a bad news, it's an observation of François Gauss, François is here, is that with this hypothesis, all the nonlinear term for capital N going to infinity, all of them goes to zero. And I will just show you the proof for the, I need 2 minutes, it's okay? Just to write the proof for this one. And if I write the proof for this one, you just compute this quantity for x minus z less than r, plus for x minus z greater than r, you use Cauchy-Schwarz, you obtain an expression of that type, and you minimize, and if you minimize, you just obtain this quantity. Now, and this says that this term goes to zero, like 1 over n to the power 1/3, which says, in fact, that the nonlinear term for n going to infinity in the R3 Fock approximation, they disappear in this scaling. Okay, I will go very fast. I wanted to compare that with the stationary case which has been treated by, for the ground state, by Lieb and Simon. And the remark that I want to say, and I don't want to go into detail, is that you have some same type of consideration, and the message is that the R3 term is important, doesn't play any role in the asymptotic of the ground state as it is computed by Lieb and Simon, but seems to play a role if you look at the correction. Okay, so that's it. Conclusion, I say that the time-dependent approximations are justified for n going to infinity. I say also that for bounded potential, the R3 and that is fully justified. What is not completely understood is the need for the exchange term. For the Coulomb potential, the hypothesis of finite energy seems up to no compulsory, but leads to poor result. And I wanted to say that for the Lieb and Simon result, they are same consideration, but which will be in between the R3, in between the leading term and the next term concerning the pertinence, the relevance of the exchange term. Okay, of course, at this level, some more work remains to be done. I have finished, and so at the end, I just give you the picture of all the people who have been talking during this week. That's it.